Welcome to Inside Track, a conversation with New York's leading property management executives. I'm Carol Ott with Habitat Magazine, and my guest today is A.J. Rexheppe, managing partner at Century Management. In the spring of 2022, New York mandated that for a co-op or a condo to qualify for a property tax abatement, it had to pay its staff a prevailing wage. If a building was unionized, this didn't really have an impact. But for those buildings that had non-union employees, the impact has been significant. And one area that has been impacted because of this is budgeting. AJ, can you explain how so?
Sure thing. First of all, thank you for having me. Specifically in terms of condo budgeting, in the spring of 2022, we had to actually provide a lot of our condo boards that were non-union with two different budgets. One was a prevailing wage budget and one was a non-prevailing wage budget. And the boards had to consider significant increases where they weren't paying prevailing wages to those common charges in order to, because now it's tied to the co-op condo abatement, to keep that co-op condo abatement.
So you mentioned condos. The prevailing wage requirement seems to impact condos more than co-ops. And can you explain why and in what way?
Within our portfolio, it certainly affected condos more because the majority of our co-ops are already union buildings.
And so condos, the majority are not unionized buildings.
Condos are, you know, in comparison to co-ops in New York City, are being built every day. A lot of them are being built non-union and not necessarily prevailing wage buildings.
So talk to me about budgeting. How, I don't quite understand the timing of it. Management companies typically prepare the budgets, maybe the late summer, early fall. How does the prevailing wage decision impact that?
So the prevailing wage decision impacts budgeting in the following respect. Because condo owners pay their own taxes, their credits are on their tax bill. And therefore, it's not an offset or anything to do with the budget. However, in order for a non-union condo to pay prevailing wages, they've got to come up with the funds in order to pay the employees prevailing wages. So you're automatically increasing your payroll budget a significant amount of money in order to pay these employees prevailing wages, which is based on the 32BJ union model anyway.
And just sort of tell me how does the if you're a condo and you decide to pay prevailing wages, now your unit owners will get the property tax abatement. But how does the city know you've done that? And somebody has to, you know, sign off that they've done it? How does that work?
Yeah, so there are a number of steps. One is, as a property manager, we're obligated to provide the city certifications of buildings that we're paying prevailing wages and that we're actually adhering to that requirement. The other issue is how the city gets information, and it's the same way they get the information on the co-op side for the abatement listings, which is how residents file their taxes, where their primary residence is listed, et cetera, et cetera. And sometimes the city will make a mistake, but on an annual basis, nearly all management companies are looking over the abatement schedules for both co-ops and condos and alerting the city if there are mistakes on the primary residences.
And that affidavit, I just want to understand, who has to sign it? Does the management company or the board?
Because we're adhering to the law, which is either they are or they aren't, we'll do it on behalf of the board.
For ease.
Right, for ease.
And let me ask you, just a drill down into the prevailing wage. The prevailing wage is made up of, am I understanding correctly, two components. And that is?
So the prevailing wage is the base wage, which is relatively close to what the union, 32BJ union wage is. And then there's the supplemental pay. And the supplemental pay is based on a 40-hour week, regardless of the amount of hours the employee works over 40 hours, but on up to 40 hours a week. And that will cover, you know, you can offset that supplemental wage with benefits, with parking, with a cell phone expense, et cetera, et cetera. There's no real rule what you can pay with that. But the reality is if the employee opts for none of that, you've got to pay it to the employee.
And that's okay, that you can pay the employee a cash supplement and they can do what
you have to.
You have to. And if the employee wants parking, does that go against that cash supplement?
Yeah, anything the employee wants. So, for example, right now, I think it's $14 and change an hour. So anything they want to offset against that $14 and change, they can do so.
So let's, I understand that there also was an impact for buildings, and this is particularly with co-ops, that have garage leases. How does the prevailing wage affect them?
So I'm glad you brought that up, because you had said at the start of this that most co-ops weren't affected. And that's what we all thought when this law came out. What we realized is that even though the building is union and the employees are paid unit scale wages, which puts them in compliance, a lot of the garage employees are not. And what we've learned through discussions with the Realty Advisory Board and the union is that they should be paying either prevailing wage and or union wages and benefits in order for the garage to comply. The law specifically states that it's not just the building employees that have to be either union or prevailing wage, but it's all the building's employees, including third-party employees like security guards and garage employees.
Now, typically, though, I mean, not, I don't know how, if this is the majority of co-ops that have, but many co-ops with garages have a lease with a garage company. That garage company has its own business model, which may or may not be paying its employees prevailing wages. I can't imagine that the co-op goes to the garage company and says, hey, now, Mr. Company, you're going to have to pay your employees more? Is that how that's working?
Unfortunately, that's how it's working. And that's what's leading to renegotiation between garage companies, whether they're leasing or licensing. You know, like you said, their model is based on the amount of not only income, but expenses. And therefore, if their expenses are going up, you can be sure they're coming back to the co-op and saying, well, this is a state law. We have to adhere to it. This wasn't the original plan. And we need a credit of whatever that difference is.
And have you seen that roll out among your co-ops?
We've definitely seen it in a couple of occasions. We've also had been surprised by a couple of garage operators where they were paying a union scale wage and or prevailing wage.
Does the building have to pay both the prevailing wage and the supplemental, I don't know if you call it a wage or the supplemental amount of money, in order for its residents to get the tax abatement, the property tax abatement?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah. So Hochul signed that bill and tied it directly to the prevailing wage slash union requirement.
And one more question. For condominiums who have had to decide whether they're going to pay prevailing wages, now a lot of ownership in condominiums is through LLCs or some kind of trust, or they're sublet. They're apartments that are sublet. But I am sure in condominiums, there are people who actually buy, own, and live there. How does a board parse out what's good for the building, what's good for the unit owners, who's going to benefit from this?
Another good question, and thank you for bringing that up, because the board doesn't parse it out. Unfortunately, it's an added amount of work to the managing agents. And what happened during the budget season, and probably going to continue to happen, you know, every budget season, is we have to provide data to the boards to show how many of their residents are actually eligible based on the abatement listings. And you hit a couple on the head, which is LLCs, trusts, and non-primary residencies. Which of those are eligible, which ones aren't? I'm sorry, definitely non-primary residences are not eligible. In addition, the law specifically blocks out LLCs, and trusts are allowed, but you know, there's some paperwork that's involved in terms of notifying for primary residency and taxes, etc. So the reality is that you could have a building that's 100% occupied, but only 20% of the residents are actually eligible for the called condo abatement. And then there's just a matter of math. It's, do you add a 17, 20, 25% increase to pay prevailing wages in order for 20% of the building to get this 17.5% tax reduction? And the majority of our condos have said no. You know, the ones that aren't willing to pay prevailing wages and don't want to pay union wages, they've done the math. They've sacrificed the abatement for the benefit of the many.
Does this have a spillover effect? I would think employees, you know, suddenly know that, I mean, they're working below market rates. Are they leaving? Is it hard to attract them to buildings like this?
So the majority of buildings where this is an issue usually employs through a third-party agency, you know, concierge services, security service, etc. So in their cases, yes, they're leaving, because now it's that much more pronounced that their counterparts are making $27 an hour. You know, their prevailing wage counterparts are not only getting that $27 an hour, but they're potentially making anywhere, you know, from $5 to $14 an hour more, depending on whether or not they take health benefits. So there definitely is more awareness in terms of what their counterparts are making, and it's certainly driving a lot of movement with employees. But That's sort of the reality. We open up a number of luxury buildings with various developers, and the one thing we advise all of them is pay them, even if it's not prevailing wages in terms of supplemental wage, pay them union comparable wages.
And I presume that the math works out in a new condominium building. The developer just has to choose to do that.
Correct.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us. I really appreciate it. Thank you, AJ.
I thank you.